RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we're going to be talking with a good buddy of mine and someone who's been on not only the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, but the Hunting Gear Podcast, Josh Raley. Josh hunts in Wisconsin quite a bit, but he lives in Georgia, and he also hunts down in Georgia. And so some of this conversation that we're going to have today is a BS session about some of the products that really stood out for us this past rut, during our rut vacation, and also products that Josh uses deep in the South where it's pretty much hot all year round, and all the way up into the North, Wisconsin, up in Wisconsin where it, if you're a Midwesterner, temperatures can be hot and they also can be extremely cold. And so we have a conversation about products that could work good in both of those scenarios. And so we're just going to call this a BS session. And it's a really good conversation. I mean, we talk about, what do we talk about? We talk about saddles and tree stands. We talk about climbers. We talk about boots. We talk about clothing a lot in this episode, bows, and the settings and accessories that go on our bow as well. And it's a really, really good, really fun and interesting conversation that we have. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. I do have to do a commercial real quick, but I want everybody to listen to it. I don't want you to skip this because, man, like, I have never in my life used pre-orbital scent on a mock scrape, or I guess a mock licking branch type of scenario. And I'll tell you right now, the trail camera that I put in front of this Rope-A-Dope system from Code Blue, absolutely, it got every picture of every deer, I'm guessing, on the farm. It wasn't just bucks that were hitting it, but it was deer of all ages and all sexes that were hitting this and smelling it. They were curious about it. Some of the bucks actually laid a scrape right in front of it. Some of them rubbed their eyes and antlers on it. It's one thing that I'm going to continue to use every single year now. I'm going to put the mock scrape right in front of all of my tree stands, and I'm going to put a trail camera right in front of that mock scrape. Not necessarily cell cams, but trail cameras to just gather information about what deer are using these scrapes. And so I'm really looking forward to continuing to learn how to make the best mock scrapes and using the scents from Code Blue to do that. So if you want to find out more about all of the scents and scent elimination products that Code Blue offers, please go to codebluescents.com. And I do have a discount code, 20% off, perfect for Black Friday, NFC20, and that's going to save you 20% off of all of your Code Blue scent purchases. And they have real urine, they have synthetic urine, so go take a look at their products, man. It's I had a conversation with someone who worked there on the Hunting Gear podcast several months ago about their collection and their quality control, and you'll hear them talk about the importance of quality control. And just like all products, whether that's tree stands or whether that's scents and how you collect these scents or how you make these scents, it's very important to have a good quality control in your manufacturing process, or however, whatever you want to call the collection process of some of these urines or the creation of some of these scents and things like that. So quality is very important for them. CodeBlueScents.com. All right. Other than that, lots of Black Friday sales are going to hit the mark, they're already started, right? So I know that Huntworth has a really big 30% off product sale coming up. And so it's important that you guys take advantage of some of these big discounts from brands high and low, accessories. I haven't seen bow manufacturers do it yet, but like clothing manufacturers, accessory, there's discounts for every product you need, boots and things like that. So keep an eye out for that. Other than that, that's all I wanted to say on this episode. If you are interested in coming on and want to come on the Hunting Gear podcast and you want to talk about the products that you use, how you use them, how they perform, whether you like them, whether you don't like them, because I like to talk about the positives of the hunting gear and equipment that we all use. But it is also important, in my opinion, to talk about the negatives of some of these products that we all use every single year. Like, hey man, a lot of people buy this, I didn't like it, and here's why. Not just to bash the company, but you got to educate people on both the good and bad of all things. So if you have maybe like a good, bad, and ugly product list that you want to share on the podcast, man, hit me up on the Nine Finger Chronicles Instagram page and we'll set it up, man. So, all right, good vibes. Thank you guys for tuning in. If you want to go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your podcast, give this podcast a 5-star review. Let everybody know how awesome and educational it is. And just let them know it's a badass podcast. Thank you very much. And let's get into today's episode. 3, 2, 1. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today I'm joined by what would your role be in the Sportsman's Empire? Like you don't have a title, but we should give you one right now. What's your title?
Oh my goodness, I can't remember. John Hudspeth from Oklahoma called me your court jester. So I think that probably is a pretty good one, the court jester.
The court jester.
Of the Sportsman's Empire.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. Hey, yeah. There it is. You need to put that on a business card.
The official court jester for the emperor.
Yep. There you go. Yeah. You better be funny, because if not, I'll chop your head off.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Big shoes to fill.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Man, you just got back from a pretty long rut hunt back in Wisconsin. What was that like?
Yeah, dude, it was, it's been a weird year at this spot in Wisconsin, man. I'll be honest with you. It, we didn't have the size of deer that we've had in the past on this property. We didn't have the numbers of big deer, that we've had in the past on this property. I've actually been texting with guys this morning who are still there. You know, they live in the area. They're hunting that spot. They've got cameras out still, and it has been dead. So the hunt itself was, for the most part, a grind, but there were these flurries of beautiful activity, especially in the first 4 days, that are everything you could want out of a public land rut hunt.
Yeah.
But for the rest of it, it was just kind of, you know, ho-hum, dreary, and, man, just a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were talking to me, you know, I don't want to be the guy who brings up something negative, but you sent me like a text message or some kind of picture of you missing. Did you miss a deer? Did you hit one and not find it right away?
It was day four.
Okay.
So real quick, you know, happened real quick. Actually, day one, I drew back on a deer. All I could see was him in the brush. All I could see was a fork. I draw back, settle in on vitals, let down, I think, you know, small deer. He gets out of the way, and he's probably, you know, pushing 150.
Ooh.
I mean, giant. But I thought it was a forky because I saw the fork. Well, that was just a big forked G2.
And, oh, my God.
Yeah, it was awful. So I snapped a picture of his frame as he ran away and looked back at me, you know, once I tried to grunt at him to get him to come back and stuff. But that was a giant. And then I ended up on the fourth day, like, barely shaving hair off of the back of another really good deer, probably a 130 class deer with a drop nine, you know, so it's just, it made it even worse.
Yeah. What was the pressure like on the property that you were hunting?
It was, there was a lot of pressure. There were a lot of people, but the people that were there were not going deep. And the people that were there, a lot of them were pheasant hunters.
Okay.
Those who were bow hunting, we're not going super deep, you know, quarter mile, half mile, and you're beyond them. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not having to work super hard. I will say, though, there was some poaching pressure while we were there.
Oh, shit.
So we actually ended up calling a game warden and got some guys busted for shooting like a 130 class 8 with a rifle.
Were you in the tree when it all went down?
Dude, I was on the ground on the edge of the marsh.
Yeah.
When this all went down, and they shot a rifle, you know, across the marsh from me.
Yeah.
So it got hairy real quick, but luckily game warden came out, sheriffs came out, guys tried to run, dropped their bags. They ended up getting busted, confiscated a bunch of guns from them. It was a wild encounter.
Dude, I'll tell you this. There's some guys out there who hear that story and they'll be like, oh man, he ratted those people out. Dude, if that's the case, call me a rat. Because I've turned in poachers before that have gotten busted, and the reason was me, and I will continue to do that until the day that I die. Because, I absolutely hate poachers, period.
Right.
Period.
Right. Well, and they took opportunities. I mean, there were three guys with rifles, right? They came out. They were wearing blaze orange.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing so that they wouldn't shoot each other. But when they shot that buck that they did and hacked it up, I mean, they weren't in there for very long and they shot a buck. I'm sure they jump shot him in the marsh. When they shot that buck, they robbed not only the natural resource,
mm-hmm.
but they robbed all of us bow hunters who were out there mm-hmm. giving it our best go during the rut. They robbed us of that buck potentially coming past us. They robbed us of that area not being pressured by gun pressure yet at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, their infraction was gigantic. So I will always report people for something like that.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody makes a mistake that I see, I'm just going to be like, hey, don't do that. That's stupid.
Yeah.
But if there's a serious infraction, I'm going to report it every time.
Yeah. Yeah. That sucks, man. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Hopefully, were you, like, after that happened, were you able to recover and have more encounters, or did the rut just not hit like it usually does?
Yeah. So, in fact, that evening, I'm sitting there texting with the game warden, and I'm sitting on the edge of this big marsh, and I put on my story, like, if the buck comes through again tonight like he did last night — this was day two.
Yep, I saw that.
Did last night, he'll be right here at 5 yards. And not him, but another buck came in, and stood at 5 yards, and I almost shot him from the ground. Looking back, I wish I would have. He was a little bit smaller deer, but so I had another buck that night. But after the shaving of the hair off the back of that deer on day four, that's when things kind of took a turn for the worst as far as just very fizzly movement. I mean, there was still good movement. I was still on deer every day, but it was just small bucks and does.
Yeah, man, it was crazy. I'm not joking. It went from 20 deer a night, 30 deer a night. I think one night I saw 40 deer all pile out of this, and then they disperse. They all bed in this one area, and then they disperse to all these different food sources. The next night, two or three deer.
What?
And then that was the rest of the rut. And so basically I put myself in a pinch point, and the buck that I eventually shot was a bonus buck I'd never seen before. And I was just like, got lucky. I was in the right place with the right wind and all that stuff, but I'd never seen this deer before. And luckily he came through.
Wow. What do you think threw the brakes on it, man? Because I'm talking with folks. Some guys are like, man, I didn't even see good rutting activity, period, this year.
Yeah.
Other guys are like, hey, that last week of October, first week of November was on fire.
Yeah.
It's been dead ever since.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, I'm thinking the temperature may have something to do with it. I'm thinking a lot of it probably has to do with population, the quantity of deer in an area, because if there's no reason for a buck to run the countryside looking for does when he's got enough does within like a 20 acre piece, right? There's no need for him to go, you know, AWOL. He can just stay right where he's at and breed these does. And so what that does is the mature bucks kind of just stay put. And then the young bucks who aren't getting the opportunities are the ones who are cruising. Hence why people see more young bucks this time of year.
Right.
So that's just a theory. That's just a theory.
That makes sense, man.
Yeah. We're going to talk about hunting gear and equipment, and we just came out of the rut. Okay. And so I want to talk to you first about some products that you used during the rut that you were just like, thank you. I'm thankful I had this product because it made what I did easier.
Yeah, man. I think one of the first products that really was kind of those aha moment products, or dare I call it a game changer, was my new camera arm.
Okay.
So I've been using the old school Muddy camera arm for a long time. They're big, they're bulky, they're heavy, whatever, but they're stable, right? Like if you've got a big, nice video camera, that's what you want to have. I threw on or picked up a Lone Wolf Custom Gear video arm or camera arm this year. And I went from a 4.5 to 5 pound setup to a 1.5 pound setup on the camera arm. Ease of use was there, man. It wasn't bulky like the other. It packs down real nice and goes in my backpack. So that was a pretty big, game changer for me, this rut.
Okay. And just because it was lighter and easier to use?
Yeah, lighter, easier to use. Man, that ease of use piece was just huge. You know, just time getting set up. I mean, I was spending a lot of time in the tree, but I would oftentimes, you know, get down and make a move by, you know, 50 yards, 60 yards, something like that. And usually when I'm carrying camera gear, it's just like, I'm just going to stay here because I don't feel like packing all this up, you know, then getting over there and setting it all back up again. But with this one, it really did kind of take it to a new level of usability and lightweight. So I was still able to, you know, go as far as I wanted. I didn't feel like I was carrying dead weight around.
Right.
Now, granted, after day four, I did stop carrying it. I started doing some crazy stuff, started crossing water, started getting down into the marsh, that kind of thing. And so I was kind of staying out of the camera game for the most part, because I was pretty sure I was going to dump all my gear in the water at some point.
Yeah. You play that camera game and all you're doing is just adding weight. That's all. I don't care how lightweight it is. You're just adding weight.
You're exactly right, man. You're adding weight and you're adding difficulty and you're adding headache.
Yep.
You really are.
Stress. And
yeah, this may be my last year playing the big camera game. I mean, I'll still take my Tacticams because they just fit in your backpack or attached to your bow and you don't even think about them anymore. But as far as a big camera goes, this might be my last year self-filming. Now, if I've got a guy that wants to tag along or whatever, or got a buddy that's tagged out, then yeah, you know, filming I think could be really fun. But I think I'm kind of done with the big camera on the self-filming piece.
Gotcha. Okay. Let's see. I'm gonna throw one out there. And so last year I dabbled in saddle hunting. This year I went in on saddle hunting. And so I the second I didn't have to bring a tree stand on a mobile running gun, I instantly felt more efficient in the, you know, in like using a saddle. Like, man, you put a platform up compared to a tree stand, you're saving like a minute maybe. And so I can get four sticks, depending on the all the branches I need to trim out of the way. I can get four sticks up, I can get my platform up, and I can just climb up and hook in. And I then, you know, the tethered system has, depending on what saddle you have, if you have the lockdown, you have these big pockets already built in, or the Phantom XL, which I have and I find the most comfortable, there's these little toggle pockets that you can pull tight and open up, and that's where I would keep in like my screw in steps and things like that.
Right.
I found myself using that, the saddle, even when I was going to a tree stand. You know, because I had some preset, I had some preset tree stands already there, and I found myself liking this hybrid saddle tree stand system the most, where if I got bored sitting down, I can just hang off my tree stand. Right. And I was wearing that as my safety harness for every hunt. Now it's lighter. It's not as bulky. It's just basically a pair of shorts with a buckle on it that you have to wear. And so I found that really comfortable, really easy to use, and less bulk.
Yeah.
And so I really like that method. I shot my buck this year while hanging off of a tree stand in a saddle. And so nice. It's like this, and I really like the way that the tethered guys explain it, is like, hey man, we don't care if you're only a saddle hunter. We don't care. We want you to use this as a tool to make your hunting more efficient and things like that. And so it's pretty cool that, you know, I can dabble in the platforms, and then I can also dabble in the tree stands, but I'm always in my saddle. And so I really liked that from a comfort standpoint.
Yeah, man. If you're in some of those old school safety harnesses, you're talking the same weight or more than a saddle. Mm-hmm. And a saddle gives you so many more options. I'm curious what sticks you're using, man. Cause I'm at the point now, by the end of my trip, I was like, I swear to all things holy, by the end, by next rutcation, I will not be using these same climbing sticks.
What climbing sticks did you use?
So I've got the Lone Wolf, like the old school Lone Wolf climbing sticks from way back in the
day.
And
you don't like those?
No. Listen. Okay. They were getting heavy. I mean, I'm walking 2 miles. I'm trudging through, you know, chest deep marsh grass kind of stuff. It wasn't the weight of them. It was the length of them that was starting to get to me.
That makes sense.
I'm 5'7", so they're either hanging down too far, they're sticking up too high, or they're too wide if I try to run them sideways. Mm-hmm. So it's the length of them.
So you need to get taller.
I need to grow 5 inches, 6 inches, and then I'll be fine. The sticks are super simple. Yeah. Like they're bulletproof when you're hanging them, mm-hmm. when you're using them. All that's great. But just the length of them. So I'm either going to have to cut them down or potentially just go to a obviously more expensive, but shorter and lighter option.
Yeah. So you need to talk with Byron Horton of Whitetail Experience. And he runs like this one stick method. I'm not sure what climbing stick he actually uses. It could be the old Lone Wolf, sort of like the XOP or something like that. But he has a one stick method with a three step aider. And that way you're only carrying in one or maybe two climbing sticks.
Right.
To get to the same height as four, and it cuts back on the weight. But your issue is not necessarily the weight, but the length.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what I did? So not last year, but the season before. So 2021, I guess. I committed to one sticking for the whole season.
Okay.
And I that entire season. Again, there's probably a lot that I could have improved on to make that a more efficient system for me. But I'm not a gear tinkerer. So at the end of the day, I'm not the guy that's going to spend 2 hours out in his backyard, like dialing it in perfect. Right. I'm going to figure it out while I'm hunting. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And so at the end of the season, I kind of had it figured out, but it was like, boy, that's a lot of extra work. It feels like to get the one sticking thing. But now after going back to, you know, the full three sticks that are full length, I'm kind of like, maybe I will go back to the one stick. Cause I've still got it laying around. I've got all my rappelling gear where I can just rappel out of the tree. So I may go back to that method. We'll see.
Okay, cool. Cool. Any other products that kind of stood out for you this rut when you were stomping public?
Man, you know what? I think there's two pieces of clothing that stood out for me. One was my rain gear this year. So I sat in the rain. One of the days it rained all day long, and I sat on this little island in the marsh just in the rain and cold all day long and stayed reasonably comfortable. Now, you know, it was humid outside, so it was easy to get cold and that kind of thing. But this was the Winstead from Huntworth, which was really, really good. And then I discovered, too, that I'm an idiot. I did not know.
That sounds like something I'd say.
Yeah. I found out that I am a moron. I did not know. So I've got the Saskatoon jacket from Huntworth, too. I didn't know they've got this like muff style pocket up here on the chest. And so for the first 2 days, my hands are freezing. Yeah, I've been wearing this thing for 2 years now. I wore it last year. But then I'm fiddling with something. I realized like one of my hands kind of goes into a pocket that I didn't know existed. And then I felt around and it's there on the other side too. And it's the warmest place that my hands have ever been.
Oh, man.
And it was a, like, I didn't wear gloves the rest of the trip.
Yeah.
I totally abandoned the gloves, which I hate wearing gloves. So,
I do too.
Anyway, man, that for me, like, made the hunt so much more comfortable. You know, being able to hunt in the rain, that's great. Obviously, during the rut, you just want to be out there. But finding those little pockets, man, I can't believe I've had that. I hunted with that jacket last fall. I hunted with it all turkey season. And now I've hunted with it this fall. And it took me until just now to discover those pockets, man.
You wish you would have known. Wish you would have known. Dude, I'll say this, man. Dude, yeah, I work with them. So take whatever I'm about to say with a grain of salt. But Huntworth and their quality of the products that they make, the apparel that they make, dude, they are legit at that price point. They are legit, man.
I was glad when you asked me if I wanted to come on this show, because I know Dan Johnson has had a lot of gear over the years, right? You've had stuff from all the big brands.
All of them.
All of them. The top end brands, right? I have always been a guy, until I started picking up some Huntworth gear, I've always been like the thrift store guy.
Yep.
Like I go in there, I grab the camo that I need on like the St. Vinny's, you know, hunting deal days or whatever it is they do at the beginning of the season where they sell off all their camo.
Yep.
I was always curious, how does this stack up quality, comfort, and warmth wise to, you know, to a Sitka, to a First Light? Like, where does Huntworth fall? Because I know price wise, they're nowhere near the price.
Yeah.
Some of that other stuff.
Yeah. So here's what I'll say about the elite brands, right? For a doll sheep in Alaska, 10 days in, you know, just crazy amount of weather swings, snow, rain, you know, just you need it to survive, let's say, right? There are individual specific garments that the elite brands make that will take care of you in those scenarios, right? And so, but also Huntworth in some of those scenarios can take care of you as well. And what I've found, you know, and on the Hunting Gear podcast, I've had the opportunity to talk to a lot of camo brands or other maybe direct to consumer companies, or, you know, smaller, newer camo companies that come out and then they give their spiel about their product line and things like that. And what I'll say is that Huntworth so far, of all of the, you know, people send me stuff all the time and I get to try it out and I get to look at it and see how well it's built. And then there's some years where I wear it and things like that. Huntworth has the most complete layering system of all of those companies. Obviously, the elite brands have that too, but I would put Huntworth at the top of, you know, like maybe just a hair under the elite brands, and only from a quality standpoint, but I would say that they're like 90% of the quality of the elite brands, and then obviously the price is just ridiculously less than, you know, like I got a catalog from one of the elite brands in the mail, and I saw one jacket for $660.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And so, man, and I've used it, Huntworth, their base layers are legit, very comfortable. I wore those every hunt, and I wore them whether it's 80 degrees out like I was out west a couple days, or when it, you know, cold front came through and it's, you know, 25 degrees for the entire day. And so the base layers to me are the most important. Usually I like to wear merino, but so I tried their synthetics out, and man, they're legit. All their products, very, very well put together. And I don't want to make this all about Huntworth, but dude, very impressed.
Yeah. I was just curious your experience, because I know you've had like hands on, yeah. And you know, it's easy for me to be impressed when I'm coming from like the thrift store camo.
Yeah. Yeah. But that kind of comes down to it. Like thrift store camo got you by for several years, yeah. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
For until I was 35.
Yeah. Right. And don't get me wrong. And you grew up hunting in the South, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
and so there's a completely different construct of gear that you need when you know you're hunting in South Georgia in November and the high is going to be 50 or something like that. Right.
Oh, 70.
70. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, even on a cold day in South Georgia, right? Maybe the coldest it gets is 50 or, you know, right. whatever that may be. Meanwhile, I'm dealing with, you know, teens and 20s here in Iowa. And so that, like being from the South, and I'm sure there's different things that, like, I haven't hunted a ton in the South, but when you're not dealing, you might be dealing with a little extra wetness down South. You might be dealing with a little extra humidity down South, and there's certain garments that play a role, but straight up temperature has so, like, there's like, you can get away with way less than a Midwesterner or Northerner.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, man. And it's, you know, one thing that we have to be sure, and you do in the Midwest too, but if you don't manage your sweat down here in the South, you are in a lot of trouble, mm-hmm. because it's so humid outside. If you start to get wet, you will not dry.
Exactly.
Because it can be 50 degrees today, you know, but you're still going to have 75 to 85% humidity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's still going to be really humid out. And so you can get real cold real fast when it's 45 and humid, mm-hmm. and you got sweaty on the way in.
Yeah.
Like, that can send you back to the truck in a hurry. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but I've talked with other camo brands who do focus on folks in the Midwest, and they're just like, yeah, we have unique challenges when we're trying to think about stuff for the South, because you know, humidity can be such a deal breaker when it comes to temps.
I always feel that when a company is making their products, especially clothing, they're just like, everybody thinks of the Midwestern Pennsylvania, you know, the Ohio River Valley, Tennessee, you know, Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, all the way down into Missouri and Iowa, you know, the Minnesota, Wisconsin, like that's who they think is. But there's an entire demographic of the Southeast, you know, all the way up to like the East Coasters that where you're, you know, you're along the Atlantic, you're still kind of north, but it still doesn't get that crazy cold.
Right.
Like
right.
in the Carolinas. And yep. so I'm just like, I feel like those people just don't get thought of enough as far as gear and clothing are concerned.
Yeah. I think, I mean, it's been underrepresented in the hunting space for just a long time period, you know, and that's starting to change. I mean, I think we've seen that over the last 5 years, but yeah, man, I mean, we're starting to see like, there's a camo brand that popped up in Florida.
Yeah.
Because they were like, you guys don't make stuff for us, so we'll start making stuff with, you know, palmetto branches on it as our camo pattern.
Yeah.
And, so it's neat seeing the new innovation for folks who do hunt in very different terrains.
Yeah. And I don't want to take anything away from, like, the real trees and the mossy oaks of the world, but they're a camo pattern, right? And then they make, like, other people mostly lease, or what's that called, license their products for their company. Yeah, I'm sure they make like Realtree probably, or Mossy Oak probably has its own line of clothing, but maybe I'm 100% wrong, but I don't think it's anything like the Huntworths or the Elite brands that are out there.
No, I don't think so. They actually used to have retail stores down here. So they had some
Mossy Oak retail stores.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I used to have those when I was a kid. We used to go to one, but it was the same. I mean, it's the same Mossy Oak stuff that you're going to get on the shelf at Walmart.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It wasn't anything on, you know, some of the higher end brands.
Yeah. Well, this has been a really good segue into ultimately I gotta say one more thing. All right, two products. I don't want to get too crazy into them, but man, my e-bike.
Oh, Dan Johnson.
Dude.
You can't do it again to me with the e-bike, man.
Dude, my e-bike, like I said, the property that I spent most of my rut in, southeast corner, I can access this farm through one and only one gate. That's it. And every time I would walk through of it, I would, the opposite hillside, I would watch does stand up out of their beds and run away. That's at 200 yards. Every time, boop, gone. I ride a bike in, nothing moves. They just kind of look at me. I was coming out at night. I had my headlamp on. I was riding the bike. There was a doe and a buck probably 30 feet away from me that did not move. They just, looking, I was like, oh, are you kidding me? I think the impact of this thing is awesome, right? I just like, it turns you into a ghost in a way. And you just they don't find it a threat. Okay, so there's that one. The second one, man, and these guys are not a partner in any way, shape, or form, but Nose Jammer, man, I have never had a negative thing happen when using Nose Jammer. Maybe the only thing negative is that a doe was coming through the terrain. She smelled my access route, which was this vanilla spray, and she got too close to me. She got curious and followed that scent close to me. And there's been times where maybe they get downwind a little bit and they spook, but it's nothing crazy. This buck that I shot this year was coming through this pinch point, reading the script. He got behind a tree, put his nose to the ground, and he smelled my, and I'm very liberal with it. Like, I'm drenching myself with this, below the knees, my boots, everything. And so if he would have continued to walk forward, I would have had like a 35 yard quartering away shot on this buck. Okay. No big deal. I would have taken it, but this buck followed it closer to me. I would say anywhere between 5 to 10 yards, and then he turned broadside to work his way back. Like he lost interest in the smell of it because he knew, like, it was like doze. What's this? What's this? Okay, whatever. Doze. You know what I mean? And right. So he got 10 yards closer to me, and then he started angling uphill, and I had him broadside at 25. And so that product brought that deer in 10 more yards for me because he was just kind of sniffing. And so I don't know, say what you want about it, but man, covering up your access route to get in there.
Man, right.
I don't know.
Okay. So I get to hear a lot of people call BS on a lot of products mm-hmm. in this space. I have never heard anyone call BS who has tried nose jammer.
Yep.
I don't know of anyone that's tried it and who said, I won't use it anymore. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
Now, I have not personally used it, but man, I need to give it a try.
Yeah. And the way that they promote it, or the science behind it, imagine you're outside, right? And you walk into a house of a smoker and you yourself don't smoke. You walk into that house and the first thing that hits your nose, you don't smell the pancakes on the stove. You don't smell the scented candle. You'd smell just a hammer to your face of cigarette smoke.
Right.
And that's what this vanilla smell does in the woods, where they're just like, da da da, smell good. You know, I smell some trees, smell some, you know, possums, blah, blah, blah. Whoa, what is that? Like, it just hits them and it's like overwhelming. That's the only thing that they smell. And so the theory is, and do this the next time you walk into a restaurant, how long it takes for your brain to balance out the scent again, so you're not just smelling the pizza, or you're not just smelling,
right.
you're able to break down all the smells that you smell, and you're not smelling just cigarette smoke. You're starting to smell the pancakes, and now you're starting to smell the scented candle and things like that. So the science behind it is pretty actually pretty intelligent.
Yeah. So it's just trying to overwhelm them.
It overwhelms them for a period of time. And that period of time is how long it takes their brain to adjust their scent levels to not make that scent so strong. It's like balancing it out.
Right. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to try it.
Yep. Do it. I recommend it.
And of course the e-bike, you had to throw that back out there.
Yeah.
I still don't have one. So
what would happen if you showed up with a $6,000 e-bike, you went out and bought it today, would she get pissed at you?
Oh, dude,
it'd be over.
Yeah, it would not be good. It would be returned. And even if I didn't want to, she would make it be returned.
Now, what if that $6,000 e-bike came with like a nice pair of earrings or a trip to somewhere warm and tropical? Would she have a problem with it then?
Yeah, absolutely. So I paid for a trip to Banff next summer. It's like we've already bought a nice trip. Does not matter.
Don't matter.
I could have bought an e-bike at the same exact time. My wife is very frugal.
Okay.
Very frugal.
Okay.
So that, man.
That's a whole nother podcast right there.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. Yeah, that's right. That's right. How to negotiate.
Okay. Hunting in the South, hunting in the North, extremes, right? We have two extremes. And so I want to talk a little bit about products that you can use in both of those scenarios. And I want to use South Georgia and I want to use Wisconsin because those are the two places that are fresh on your mind. You live in Georgia, you hunt in Wisconsin. Okay.
Right.
I want to talk about those two specifically. First question to you is, are there products that you use that you can use in both of those cold temp, hot temp scenarios?
Yeah, I think, you know, even if you just start from a clothing perspective, you know, pretty much a lot of the stuff that I'm thinking about for early season, like up in Wisconsin, like my early season gear in Wisconsin is going to get me into December. Mm-hmm. you know, hunting down here in the South. So there's a lot of carryover there. Luckily, camo brands are getting good enough at this point that, you know, patterns and that kind of stuff are good enough generally across the board to survive, you know, whether it be a Wisconsin October or a early December in the South. So that's still working out for me. You know, and then all the way down to, you know, my bow, that kind of thing there, but there are differences in the way that I use some of the gear, you know? So for instance, my bow, my arrows, none of that changes north to south, but how I've got that set up changes dramatically when I'm hunting north to south. So my bow, when I'm up in Wisconsin, is going to be cranked down to about 62 pounds. When I'm down here in the South and I'm hunting early season, I'm going to have it cranked all the way up to 70.
Explain why the difference. I don't see, like, for me, I wouldn't assume you would need to do that.
It has everything to do with my bulk, everything to do with what I can draw back on, right? Like restriction and movement.
Okay.
So down here in the South, I'm wearing light clothes. Like what I'm wearing right now, I'm wearing a hoodie right now. This would be almost too much to walk into the woods with today. You'd have to walk in with a t-shirt, maybe a long sleeve t-shirt, and then throw a hoodie on over that. I can draw back 70 pounds, not a question, right? A 19 degree November morning in Wisconsin with frost on the ground, I'm going to have a hard time getting that 70 pounds pulled back when I've got on a base layer and then a shirt layer and then an insulating layer and then maybe one or two layers on top of that. You know what I mean? It's just a bulk perspective. I'm not so much worried about not being able to draw in the cold as I am about not being able to draw with that much more clothing on.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. I can definitely understand.
Yeah. There's a tweak there. You know, there are a lot of products as well that I do use a ton, up north that I don't use as much in the South, but
yeah.
You know, clothing is the big thing that kind of stands out of, like, it spans the test of both. You know, and I'm going to be wearing it both places. I'm just going to be wearing my early season gear.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So there, it's basically the same clothes. It's just how much of it you actually have to wear down South.
Yeah, right on. Okay. And I'm going to make sure to have multiple sets too. So like up north, I may have, you know, one outer jacket. Well, down here, I might have three sets of lighter clothing because I'm going to get sweaty. I'm going to get hot. I'm going to get wet. Like, there's just a lot more that happens down here to your clothing where it's like this outfit is not suitable for hunting again tomorrow. I need to wash it up or dry it out or whatever the case may be.
Does the South, because I can only speak from experience here, if I'm wearing anything fleece, anything to walk into the woods, and usually it's the first, you get into a field edge and it's the first 10 or 20 yards of that field edge to open timber transition, there's multiflower rose, there's cockerburs, there's thorns, you name it, it's going to stick to your fleece. Does the South have those same types of annoyance plants that stick to your clothes like the North does?
Yeah, and I will say that I think we have fewer of those that really want to get into your clothing and stay there.
Beggar's lice?
Yeah, like beggar's lice, like stuff that legit last year, I threw away a wool base layer last year because that had so many beggar's lice in it. I was like, I don't have the time. Like my time is worth more than trying to pick all this out. Mm-hmm. So we don't have as many that stick with you like that, but we probably have more that are trying to literally saw your arm off whenever you walk through it, if that makes sense.
A lot of pokies,
a lot of greenbrier that you're going to get wrapped up in. A lot of blackberry and, you know, wild raspberry bushes and that kind of stuff that you're going to get wrapped up in. So there's a lot here that's going to tear up your clothes, but not as much that wants to go with you.
Right. Okay. The next thing I wanted to ask was the trees. You know, when I was down in Alabama, when I was living down in Alabama, trees were just like, they just grew straight up and down. Right.
Yeah.
The pine stands that I was in, even if I found like a hardwood patch, it just seemed to be straight up and down here in the Midwest. And I'm sure on the public that you were in gnarly trees, low splits all over the place. Do you use a different climbing method or saddle platform tree stand combination between the north and the south?
Yes. Now, a lot of times down here in the south, I will still use the old school summit climber.
Okay.
Now, a lot of that has to do with where I'm hunting. You know, I am hunting a good number of private places down here that I don't have to walk 2 miles on. Mm-hmm. It also has to do with how high I can get. Because, you know, in Wisconsin, I'm hunting trees with a, well, I don't know what that would be, like a 65 or 75 degree lean to them or something like that. Mm-hmm. A lot of lean to the tree and, you know, scrubby and brushy and that kind of thing. Well, here I've got pines and, you know, between the 10 foot elevation marker, which is where like a lot of the understory cuts out, to 25 to 30 feet, there's nothing there. So if you're inside of that 10 feet to 25 feet window, you're going to get busted super, super easy. So I can't carry in 12 sticks, right, to try to get all the way up there. So I need to bring in a climber so I can get the height appropriately.
To get above that cover, that canopy.
Yeah, to get above the canopy, to give myself a good shot, but also to get out of the deer's point of view. I mean, I find it's not quite this way in Wisconsin. I know some other states are like this, but down in the south, man, the deer just look up. Like they're so attuned to people being in trees that it's not a safe bet just because you're off the ground.
Yeah. And also I would assume that like, is this permission piece or are you part of a hunt club down south or a lease, like multiple person lease?
Yeah, man, I do it all. So we've got family land down here, which is, you know, kind of one of those primo spots set up just like we want to. Then I've got a 2,000 acre lease that I'm part of with a bunch of other guys. And then we've got a 30,000 acre piece of public right down the road.
Okay.
So I kind of span the gamut, owned land, leased land. I do have one or two permission spots down here that are kind of in the middle of that owned and leased, you know, as far as, you know, what I can do on them. And then I have the public.
Okay. Okay.
So,
with that said, then you have the ability, like some of the properties that I have, to go in there, preset everything, make it as comfortable as you want it, get the hooks are already in, so the only thing you need to do is clip up your bow, climb up into your tree stand, pull it up, and sit down, right? Like, you can be prepared. And so, are there any differences in gear for that you use? And obviously, that's probably the biggest disparity is mobile versus preset in gear, as far as not necessarily your bow, but your climbing sticks and things like that. Are there products... Is there like what products are different there versus, you know, your public land versus your preset stuff?
Yeah, our preset stuff, we're going to be, like I said, we're going to be running a lot of, you know, a lot of times what we'll do, we'll take a summit climber and just leave it at the base of a tree, mm-hmm. you know, at a place where it's real nice and brushed in and that kind of thing. So those will stay there. We will use Millennium hang on stands quite a bit. They are the lawn chair of stands. And
I said this to somebody else. I said it to somebody else. I'm like, dude, I love running and gunning, but there's something about sitting in a really comfortable tree stand in the rut, knowing deer are going to come through a historic pinch point or funnel or something like that, and just sitting there just laid back and feeling good, man. Like, I feel like I want to – I think they're called the Monsters. The Millennium Monsters. It's just like, it's like my office table up there on the platform with just like a lawn chair, like one of those leaning back lawn chairs, and you can just get as comfortable. Like, I'm all about the mobile, the run and gun, the saddle, the, you know, the lone wolf style hang-ons, but they're like, I'm getting to the age now where those Millenniums are looking really good.
Yeah, man, the day that I buy a piece that belongs to me solely, mm-hmm. I'm going to cover that thing in Millennium tree stands, and I will never go back. Now, I like mobile. I still hunt mobile on our lease because I don't know what you guys are doing. I have to treat that like public. It's actually probably more pressured than the public down the road.
Yeah,
it just so many guys are in there consistently. But we'll use a lot of ladder stands. And actually, man, one of my personal favorites has become the Millennium tripod stands. Have you seen those?
So it's a tripod stand with a millennium big relaxing seat on top.
Right at the top.
For like rifle hunting or bow hunting?
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's another thing, too. So down here, rifle season started in Georgia in October.
Jiminy Christmas.
And our rifle season will run through January.
Okay.
In Alabama, rifle season just kicked off or is kicking off this weekend and will run through February.
Gotcha.
So that's a huge gear difference, too, man. Pretty quick, I'm going to be swapping out the bow for gun hunting.
Yep.
And I'll still bring the bow out on occasion, but it's really difficult when you're on a lease or when you're on family land to explain why I need help tracking a deer when they're like, why don't you just bring your 30-06?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to help you track a deer. You can shoot them at 30 with your 30-06.
And then they just die right there.
Yeah. And they just fall over. Yeah. So why are we doing this?
Yeah.
So, yeah, man. So I'm going to break out the gun pretty quick and it'll be out for the rest of the year, most likely, unless I hit up some public, in which case I have to break the bow back out.
Yeah, for sure. Any other products that have kind of popped into your head that you want to talk about over the last handful of weeks?
Yeah, man. I mean, there are some that are huge for me in Wisconsin that I'm not using a lot down here. Number one's the hand muff. Like, you get like one of those muffs that goes around your waist.
Yep.
Love having one of those. Hand warmers obviously go hand in hand with that. There's one that I would really like to try for hunting up north, though. I just need to talk to a couple of people that are doing it, and that's the heated base layers.
Oh, like, yeah.
Battery powered.
Yep.
I've not tried those yet, but honestly, it seems like it could be really good whether you're hunting north or south because you could go in so light.
Yeah.
Wearing, almost nothing. And then throw your jacket on, turn that on, and you're good to go. You don't
exactly.
Do that work you can produce.
Yeah. I've done that. So I had a heated vest on, but for some reason I found it to be a bit complicated.
And
it's
really
it's like another piece that you get to the truck, you take it off. On your walk in, you take it off on your walk out, but then you forget to like charge the battery on it. And then the next thing you know, it's just like, I have this thing and I'm not even using it the way it's supposed to be used. And right. So I don't know. Like I see the fact, like being able to wear less layers in cold weather is a huge, I guess you'd call it a turn on for me. I would love to not feel so bulky. In winter type weather, but for some reason, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm a dumbass. And that's probably the reason.
What I hear is we're discovering all kinds of ways that me and you are just pretty dumb when it comes to hunting. That's what I'm picking up.
Yeah. How do we even get it done?
I have no idea.
Exactly.
I have no idea. I don't know how we even kill deer.
Exactly. Yeah. Anything else?
Man, I think that's really about it. There are a lot of differences, I think, in setup or the way that gear is used. But, for the most part, I have, because of my style of hunting and because it includes north to south travel, I have worked really hard to tailor my setup so that I can use it consistently across both, if that makes sense.
Yep.
If I was just hunting one place only and then made the move, there might be some bigger glaring differences, but for me, man, I've worked hard to make it all work everywhere because I know I'm going to be hunting a little bit of everywhere every fall.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. All right. I got two products that I kind of want to end with and you can jump in if this sparks any interest. It's really one product, but two different brands that I've Exodus trail cameras. All right.
Okay.
Specifically their cell cams.
Well, right.
Two things about that company. One, I have a lot of cameras from them because in the past I used to work with them, right? So they would send me trail cameras. Worked pretty well. They work very well to the point where I'm from their first generation of their product. I'm using that camera still. It's not a cell cam. It's a cam that I will go and I'll put out in the middle of the timber and I'll let it soak all year round, right? Till the batteries are dead. And it's continuing to perform. Like I've only had one trail camera of theirs that for some reason, I don't know if I needed to do an update to it or not, but it would always, every time I turned it on, it would reset to taking 1 minute or one picture every 1 minute. And I couldn't reset it or set it back to default. So that's the only camera that I have of theirs that, you know, I've had issues with. But their cell cameras work. They're very easy to set up and they work very well. And I can trust them, basically. The other company that I, as far as cell cams, is that Cuddy Link system.
Right. Yep. Right.
And so I will say there's a bit of a learning curve. That is, it's steeper than other cell cameras that are out there. But connecting all of this and how to connect the daisy chains worth of cameras is a little bit, I'm going to say, it's going to be more difficult than a regular cell cam to set up. But the cool part is now I have cell cameras in areas that don't have cell coverage.
Right.
And so it kicks those pictures back to you through that daisy chain effect. And I've had to go into the settings and change it to my liking a couple times to make sure everything's working right. But the idea behind it is really, really awesome. And I'm really liking that portion of it as well.
Yeah. That's a pretty sweet system they've got dialed. And I've actually tried to talk my dad into getting those for our family property. Yeah. Because I'm like, Dad, you could literally just have one in your backyard. Because the backyard is a food plot, right? Like, yeah. He plant back end of our backyard. I'm like, dude, just make that the cell camera or the one that you go check and have the links, you know, from, I mean, we've got, what, 40 acres, 35 acres, something like that on the home farm. So, like, just have them all send into that one camera. We don't even have to step into the woods to go check cameras. But I guess, I don't know, we like the golf cart ride, too.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. To go check all the cameras for the day.
Now, now listen to this. This is one thing that I like and I don't like about cell cams. All right. Ultimately, this episode did was it kind of turned into a BS session. But the thing about cell cams is I'm 100 yards from two cell cams, right? And so I can see deer come through this pinch point while I'm in the tree stand.
Right.
And so do I say to myself, hey, I should rattle now because of this. So you know what I mean? I have this information. Should I rattle now? And ultimately I did some testing on it, right? I tested it on deer that I know I wasn't going to shoot. Okay. And so I got the trigger. Looked at my, you know, I would just look at my camera, and most of the time I was looking at my camera this year was because I hit that buck and I wanted to see if he was still alive. So anytime I got a confirmation that I had a picture, I went and checked it. And so I was getting pictures in real time of deer that were 100 yards away from me. And so I tested it, got the picture, rattled, sure enough, deer came in within shooting range.
Mm.
And there was a part of me that felt a little icky.
Yeah.
Because would I have rattled if I didn't have that information? The answer is probably no.
Right.
And so I don't know, man. It didn't really feel right.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. And I don't know any other way to explain it.
I follow a guy on Instagram, man, and he may listen to this and may hear me talking about it. Twice now this year, he has seen a buck on a cell camera, snuck into a spot, and shot said buck.
With a rifle or with a...
With a rifle.
With a rifle. Oh.
So one of them, I think the buck was just at the feeder, and he caught a glimpse of it, goes in, shoots it with the rifle. The second one... He saw the buck with a doe. The doe was at the feeder. He goes in. The buck wasn't there, but he's like, that's cool. I'll still hunt. 10 minutes later, buck comes back through. Like bucks do during the rut, mm-hmm. right? They find those areas, and they're just back and forth. So that's two that he has killed now this year. And he went out specifically because he got the picture on the cell camera.
Oh, yeah.
And those, I feel like, are the same guys who are saying, no, no, we would never do that. Don't worry about the slippery slope.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
But so it rubs me wrong. And I feel icky.
Yeah.
I still use cell cameras. I'm not going to stop using cell cameras.
Yeah.
Dude, when they're used like that.
It's just really tempting, right? I mean, it's really tempting to have that. I mean, in a way, it's like a video game cheat code, right? Yeah. You can put it, hey, I'm not going to get, like, I'm going to have 90% more power because I put in this code. Well, you have that, and now your eyes are literally everywhere at one time, right? And I get it. Trail cameras don't capture a 360 view of an entire area, or most don't, just a sliver. But if that sliver provided you with said information, man, it just takes so much woodsmanship out of hunting. It's because it's just, and you know, you start to hear these conversations about drones, right? A guy that we both know shot a deer, and he lost blood. So instead of getting a dog to follow it, he got a drone. And the drone came in and turned on its thermal imagery, and it was just picking out deer. And you could zoom in, and you could tell how many points it had, how big it was, where it was going, what terrain system it was in, and it sit there and follow it. And so he was able to get a confirmation that that buck did not die, and it was actually chasing a doe. But he was telling me, like, I don't know how I feel about that, because that technology is so good that you can turn it on and you can zoom in and you can identify deer from a drone.
Right.
So I don't know, man. I would rather drones just be used for recovery. I think that is a really good use for them, to recover wounded or dead deer. But from a scouting standpoint, oh man. Or like, hey, should I hunt this stand tonight? Here's how I'll find out.
Here is more full.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going to hunt.
Yeah.
Man, that's sketchy. And Dan, I just got to say one more piece of proof that I'm an idiot. I had a buck cross a terrain feature that when I was hunting last week, he was about a little over 100 yards from me. Mm-hmm. It did not even cross my mind to rattle. It didn't even. That buck may as well have been 100 miles away.
Yep.
And I sat there twiddling my thumbs like, oh boy, I sure wish he'd come over here. And it didn't even cross my mind.
I probably rattle too much, to be honest with you. That's my favorite thing to do. It's just crack the horns until I'm almost needing to take off a layer of clothes. That's how hard I go at it.
Johnson's workout routine.
Exactly. Just rattle.
That's awesome.
Well, hey, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and BS with me for a while. Man, still a lot of time to get out there and hunt. I'm looking forward to my late season adventures, and I know you got a lot of time left in Georgia. So good luck the rest of the season, and thanks for coming on today, man.
Yeah, Dan, thanks for having me on, and good luck to you as well.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.